You're listening to the MoneyWeb Now podcast series with Simon Brown. Live streamed every weekday at 6:30 a.m.
It's Monday, 11th of May. I'm Simon Brown, coming at you live and loud from the MoneyWeb Global Headquarters in Johannesburg. On the show today, Pietri Radenhuis from Hironya Capital Advisors on some charts that caught his attention over the weekend. Tracy Davies, Director at Just Share, on the risks of virtual AGMs. And Dr. Adrian Saville, Canon Asset Managers, talking U.S. unemployment and the costs of the pandemic. Some morning headlines from MoneyWeb. A third of residential tenants won't pay full rent this year. And on Business Day, an oversupply of residential property is on the horizon after lockdown.
MoneyWeb Now. On the money. Also available on podcast.
Trading markets with Pietri Radenhuis. He's a founder of Hironya Capital Advisors. He's a technical trader. He puts out some charts on the weekend. Pietri, I appreciate your time this morning. Let's kick off with your S&P. We've seen a massive rally off that collapse from sort of late March into early April. And you're not totally bearish, but your bias here is certainly looking perhaps for some downside in the coming days, weeks, maybe months ahead.
Good morning, and thank you for making sure I'm awake so early. I think it's a bit of a strange situation, really. Obviously, we've had quite a strong market pullback or semi-crash, if you can call it that. But since then, over the last couple of months, we've actually seen the market pullback or bounce back really nicely. And as what looks to be entered into a bit of a resistance area just underneath the 126-day moving average. If you look at the way market's trading now, Asia is up, S&P 500 futures is up as well, so it seems as though it's going to be a strong start for the week. There's a couple of things happening. One, that this bounce back has pulled, has bounced back more than half of the move actually that it's made down, which I think could be setting up potentially for an ABC type setup down, but also, there is this bit of a disconnect or a feel like a logical disconnect between, what the potential economic or macroeconomic fallout is going to be of the pandemic and what equity markets are currently pricing in. It just doesn't feel as if the market is really taking all factors into consideration here and exactly how long the economic sort of damage is going to last. So it feels as if the market is entered into a resistance zone. It's been in here, it's the second time it's in this zone. So we're kind of expecting perhaps that once the market starts getting closer to 3,000, or the S&P 500 at least, once it gets closer to that 3,000 level, that it may start showing a little bit of weakness.
Yeah, and you would look and you stress, I mean, this isn't a jump in, go short. This is a case of look for that weakness, build the position, maybe around or just below that 3,000 level.
Yeah, exactly. That coincides nicely with 126-day moving average, and this is also sort of the upper edge of that resistance zone, which used to be support back in the day. As it turns out, these areas remain areas around which the market sort of polarizes, if you can call it that. Mm-hmm. So it feels, momentum shifting both towards the downside. So it feels as if the market's running out of steam, and if you could start building a position or a short position around 3,000 on the S&P, then that's what we're looking to do, at least for the week ahead.
The other one that caught your attention was the Rand dollar in particular, kind of being consolidating quite a wide range, 18, the sort of bottom of the range, 19 Rand versus dollar, sort of top of the range. Your view, you say, is still probably slanted towards that ZAR strength, notwithstanding negative news flows, sentiment, etc. But the Rand's looking, and I kind of support it. It hasn't blown out. A lot of the talk that Rand would be 20, 25, 30, it's been surprisingly strong, and you think it could perhaps even be going maybe a little bit stronger.
Yeah, look, I think there's some other major catalysts to push them in the direction of weakness. I do think that the logical follow through for me, at least, is for the Rand should strengthen. We've got this, like you say, really since at 19, supported at 18, so it's been trading in this range for quite some time, which is making a mistake, it's a big range. So the way that we see it is that, there's no real sort of indicator for a directional move until either one of those levels is broken. If it breaks below 18 and strengthens up from there, then we probably see follow through that we see quite a big, a lot of ground being taken back that had lost as the pandemic broke out. However, obviously, if there's a catalyst, let's say, for example, a huge escalation in the trade war and it breaks up above 19, then all bets are off. The way that we sort of expect it to position in the coming weeks is that, worst is almost out of the way now for us. We've been downgraded to junk. We've had our blowouts. So I think South Africa is one of the most attractive junk bonds out there.
Yeah.
So we could potentially see a little bit of inflow from that, which may be counterintuitive at this stage, particularly given the fact that, the market is falling apart everywhere. And if there is good sort of news and we see signs of the world economy switching back on and demand for natural resources coming back to what they were, and then it'll take a while, but that is all sort of reasons for us to be expecting a stronger end.
Yeah, in many senses, we've had bad news. We had a ton of bad news, but we kind of know what the bad news is, I suppose, going forward. And to your point, I mean, people have been buying bonds. Bond yields, I mean, the shorter term are below 8%, the 10 years hovering at 9.3. We might be junk, but a lot of people out there think our bonds are attractive, even as junk, because they search for yield. That's Petri Radenhuis. He is founder of Herenia Capital Advisors. Petri, appreciate the time this very early morning for you.
MoneyWeb now on the money.
I'm going to be chatting with Tracy Davies. She's a director at Just Share. They sent out a note on Friday around risks of virtual AGMs. Tracy, appreciate your time this morning. Let's first AGMs. I mean, three sort of main features of an AGM. That's voting on resolutions, company feedback, and the third point is that Q&A session. A lot of AGMs don't much like that Q&A. Sometimes they get a bit testy, but it is a very important part of an annual and general meeting, is the ability of shareholders to question management in an open forum.
Hi, Simon. Yes, it is the most important element, if you ask me, but then I am a shareholder activist.
Yeah, I agree with you 100%.
Yeah. And as you say, it's not the favorite part of most AGMs for most boards, because it is difficult to face people directly without any sort of intermediary, like a lawyer or an investor relations person or a PR person, and answer questions that could quite frankly be about anything. And I've attended a lot of AGMs in South Africa, and while some boards manage that question and answer session very well, there are others who quite clearly almost resent it, to be honest. And the point of our note was to really emphasize the importance of that real-time question and answer session, because the virtual AGM, for pretty obvious reasons, provides quite an easy way to shut questions down.
Yeah, and that easy way is, I mean, I've been on webcasts and the like, and I know what the process is. Someone puts a question into it, and I reword it. I make it better. I remove the duplications, et cetera, et cetera. I am inserting myself into that process between the person asking the question and the question actually being asked. And this is a real risk where questions could be sanitized, questions could be ignored, questions could be fundamentally changed to what they are, and that completely destroys that process of the Q&A at a face-to-face AGM, because we're now running virtual.
Yes, and that is exactly our point. In fact, I've been at AGMs where even though you're in the room person, you still have to submit your question in written form on one of those little devices that they provide you with. And even that really opens the process up to a lot of sanitization and it's not even by the board. It's, it's by whoever's sitting in the
Absolutely.
Middle deciding whether or not to submit the question. And also, I think an important point, Simon, is that not all questions are easy to just put down in writing, right? They're not one-line questions. They're not a couple of words. A lot of the time, especially from communities that are affected by a company's operations or activists like myself, you need to give a little bit of context, you know, you need to explain who you are and why you're there and why you're asking the question. And the minute you force people to reduce that to writing, you also severely curtail their ability to express themselves.
Yeah, that's a great point. Particularly if it's not your mother tongue, you might speak better in a second language than you're actually able to write in that second language. What you essentially, you're publishing guidelines and you're saying allow the participants to sit those questions in real time. Better yet, allow them to actually do the questions verbally. And the technology absolutely allows for this. And what you're saying is, you know, listed companies must actually state this up front and state their intention to make this process transparent and to make it fair to the question askers. Technology is there. No reason why they shouldn't.
Exactly. And one thing we've all seen in the past month and a half or 7 weeks that we've been working from home is that the technology is now there to do this. You can ask questions in real time. Almost everybody has a camera and a microphone on their computer. You know, the connections tend to be very good. So it's not an excuse to say that it's too tricky from a technological point of view. And I think even a poor indication of the intentions or even maybe perhaps the fact that companies haven't really even thought about this is the fact that we're seeing in the notices of AGM either no reference whatsoever to the Q&A session or references that make it clear that the questions are going to be, have to be submitted in writing and will be moderated in the middle. So what we're saying is, you know, as a sort of heads up to shareholders and to companies, that is not good enough. You've got to give more thought to this. You've got to make it clear that people can interact in real time. And you've got to show good faith as a company that you're going to facilitate that.
Is moderating questions in advance, is that in breach of the Companies Act?
Well, you can moderate questions. In theory, you could moderate them if the process was completely transparent, right? So if all questions went up on a screen, for example, and it was clear to people, the moderator would say, right, I'm going to remove this one because it's exactly the same as the one above. But the Companies Act is clear. It says that you have to be able to communicate concurrently with each other without an intermediary. And, you know, one of the strongest principles of interpretation of legal statutes is that if there are words in an act, they are there for a reason. Mm-hmm. So that has not been put in there by accident. That has been put in there as a clear indication that you cannot have an intermediary between a questioner and the board. And in my view, and in the view of many of the lawyers that I've checked this with, a moderator is clearly an intermediary.
Yeah, that transparency is absolutely important. A quick last question. We've got virtual AGMs as a result of the lockdown. My sense is I quite like the idea of we can do post-lockdown a normal AGM, but virtual as well, because it means I can, you know, I can attend the AGM in cities where I'm not, in countries where I'm not. There are a lot of AGMs that I just can't get to for geographic reasons. Virtual's a neat solution to that, assuming we do the question part properly.
Yes, of course. And we're not for a moment saying that they are inherently bad. As you say, in fact, there are huge advantages to them from a participation point of view. The ideal really, and there are quite a few companies that have done this already, is to have an in-person AGM that is also accessible online. And we're recommending that companies commit to doing that as soon as they can, once it's safe for people to actually attend these things in person.
Yeah, that's my ideal. And then I can attend them all from my lounge in my half of a suit and half of a tracksuit. Tracy Davies,
exactly.
Director at Just Share, appreciate the time this morning.
MoneyWeb now, on the money.
Chatting now with Dr. Adrian Saville. He is founder and CEO of Canon Asset Managers. Adrian, morning. We got the shocking U.S. unemployment numbers on Friday. Shocking in the sense that they're the worst since almost forever. Not shocking in the sense, I suppose, we saw it coming. And truthfully, you know, unemployment's probably going to get north of 20, maybe as high as 25% in the U.S. It's a staggering number.
It heads into Great Depression type territory, Simon. The overused word in this environment is unprecedented, and it's certainly not unprecedented, but it takes us into territory that we haven't seen in the better part of 100 years.
Yeah. In America, they do have very, very simple labor rules, which does enable them to fire fast. The trick is the rehiring part of the process could also happen fast, but that requires confidence from the companies. We need to start seeing a light at the end of the tunnel in terms of lockdown, in terms of economic activity, to get that 20-25% of Americans back into the labor force sooner rather than later. But it could be a very slow process.
Well, I think what the U.S. numbers provide or afford, which we don't have in the domestic environment, is the frequency of the data. So we're getting numbers on a weekly basis, and we're getting them very close to the event. You're far closer to the coalface from the perspective of the U.S. data. But, you know, the second point, you're absolutely right, is the flexibility in labor laws or labor legislation means that in the case of the U.S., you can fire quickly or retrench quickly and rehire quickly. So that's why there is this intrigue with the shape of the recovery. If it is indeed V-shaped, then the U.S. economy would rebound quickly, and those that have been laid off would be rehired, you know, with equal speed.
You make a great point about the speed of that data coming out. We saw PMI, which was a nice indicator because that gave us April. That data was coming out early last week. We've also seen some flash GDP numbers, and to illustrate, our GDP will come out late June, whereas, you know, by the end of this week, we would have had most of Europe, most of the developed economies show us the GDP. That's first quarter GDP, but we're starting to get a sense of the economic impact, of the cost of this. We've had our SARS commissioner talking around, you know, plus $200 billion loss of tax revenue. We're starting to get the picture of the impact of lockdowns around the world, and it is, truthfully, as we expected, they horror numbers. This is, you know, lockdown is a debilitating for global economies and costing fortunes.
In the case of the South African economy,
And then we lost Adrian there. In the case of the South African economy, he's just disappeared. The line is there, but unfortunately sometimes mobile lines are not as great as we need them to be. What Adrian's going to say, I mean, the governor was talking last week and he mentioned around this sort of a dual shock to the economy. On the one side, we've got demand and supply that has sort of vanished on both sides. And then, of course, the response to the health crisis, in a sense, creates a secondary economic shock. And it's those multiple shocks at it. Now, the challenge that we have got as economies, as countries, as a planet, is managing that process. We can't skew, you know, and just say it's only about economic. You know, we won't worry about the health part of the process. We absolutely have to worry about the health of our communities. If we have vast swaths of our communities being decimated by COVID-19, that is absolutely going to be a problem, and it's going to have economic implications. It will have that impact. We're going to have the economic impact. The challenge, governments around the world, communities around the world, and I suppose health practitioners around the world have, is going to be, how do we manage that balance? How do we manage an economy? And at the same time, how do we manage the communities and make sure that we protect them from that health and from that economic aspect? We're going to park it there. We were chatting to Dr. Adrian Saville. He, of course, founder and CEO of Canon Asset Managers. And sometimes, unfortunately, technology doesn't always work. And that's the joys of early mornings. Nobody in studio. But we'll leave it there for this morning. My thanks to our team. That's, of course, Cordora and Eddie, who helped me with the show every morning. You'll find us live every morning, 6:30 on moneyweb.co.za or on the app. And, of course, the podcast available from 7 a.m. every morning. My name is Simon Brown. This is MoneyWeb Now. We'll chat again tomorrow.
You've been listening to another MoneyWeb Now podcast, posted every weekday at 7 a.m. on moneyweb.co.za. MoneyWeb Now, on the money.